Hi, it's Ross Jeffries. Welcome once again to Up to Speed with Speed Seduction. This is Module 5, Designing Your State of Mind. This will be the last official module, but from time to time we may be posting some bonus modules, so do look for those. Once again, a reminder that all rights are reserved. It's copyright 2008 Ross Jeffries and Gita Services, Inc., but I do encourage you to pass this around, put it on a blog, post it in your website, put it on StumbleUpon, Facebook, Twitter, I don't care. But do make sure that you leave all the content intact. Don't add anything, don't subtract anything, don't change anything. Leave all the links intact and always remember, give it away for free. Let's get going. You're going to really like this because one-third of Speed Seduction is about you, the tools that create your state. So let's get to it. Here's a gold key principle. Beautiful women create altered states of consciousness. Now, what do I mean by a state? A state is the combination of your internal representations. We talked about that. What you visualize, the sounds you make, what you say to yourself, and then your physiology, the way you're breathing, your posture, your muscle tone, your movement, the flows of sensation in your body. And then on a deeper, more profound level, your beliefs about yourself, your beliefs about your sense of identity, your sense of capability, your sense of possibility, your sense of deservingness. The meanings that you attribute to situations. And many, if not all of these, can be outside of conscious awareness. Now remember, when things operate outside of conscious awareness, they tend to have an irresistible and hypnotic power. What do I mean by an altered state? Well, that's a good question. Do I mean a mystical state of union with the universe? Not necessarily. That could be an altered state. An altered state is simply a state in which the state you were in previous is no longer around, and the learning and the capability and the ways of thinking you had a moment ago are no longer available to you. Now, that may not be a detriment. You may have a better set of ideas, a better set of beliefs, a better set of internal representations. But altered states are not limited to drug experiences. They're not limited to a visit by God or aliens. Altered states are what happen all the time anyway. One of the more profound understandings of speed seduction is not that it's hypnotic, but that most of our processes are hypnotic in that they take place outside of our conscious awareness and outside of our choice. So the real question is not, are you going to have an altered state? The real question is, are you going to go into an altered state that's useful for you, that serves your purposes? I've often said, if you're going to build an autopilot, why not build an autopilot that flies the plane instead of crashes into the ground? And again, when you're in certain states, you're able to access learning or skill that's not available to you in other states. Let's just take a pretty common example. You probably know your phone number. Right now, as you're watching this, if I said recite your phone number, just do it. Okay, easy, piece of cake, right? Now, let's say I put you on a highway and you're going 70 miles an hour. All of a sudden, your engine quit. Your car was flaming, the flames leaping everywhere all through your car. And you knew you were like a second away from dying. If I asked you to recite your phone number then, you might not be able to get access to that information. So one of the things I would like you to understand is that learning and skills are state dependent. So another gold key principle here is your state can be designed and controlled and created by you. You don't have to accept what I would call a default state. A default state is just a state you typically go into because that's what habit, the force of habit has taught you how to do. We don't want you to go into a default state. I want to present the idea that you can design in your state. And again, I keep coming back to this notion of recipes. See, there's no such thing as competence. It's not a thing like fluid in your body, like oil in your car. The oil, you know, you go to the mechanic, he measures your, puts the dipstick in and, you know, he says, oh, you're a quart low on oil. Well, you don't have a quart low of confidence fluid and you need more put in your tank. Rather, think in terms of recipe. Any state that you would like to create is just the combination at any given moment of the internal representation, the physiology, the flows of feeling in the body in a certain proportion, in a certain sequence. So if you want to change state, change the recipe. Now, how do we change a recipe? Well, we could pull one element out. If you're baking a cake and you take out the heat from the oven, you're not going to get a cake. Or we could change the order of the recipe and see what happens. We can change the proportion of the ingredients. What does this translate to for you? Well, if you're making imagery in your mind of women rejecting you, you can, you know, shrink down the image, make it really small, make a much bigger image in your mind of things coming out the way you want them to. If you have a voice in your head that says, you'll never get anywhere, sweeten the tonality. I learned this from my teacher, Richard Bandler. So it's the same thing, but it says, you're such a fuck up. That girl will never like you. You're such a loser. So there are a lot of different elements that you can change in the recipe that produces your state. But a key idea here is what you can gain awareness of, you can gain the possibility of controlling. And even beyond controlling, you gain the possibility of playing with, of designing. See, I certainly think that control is better than no control, but even better than control is design, is play, is fun. When you were a kid, if you played with Legos or Tinker Toys or whatever, you didn't do it for primarily a sense of control over the toys. You did it to build something and have fun. And what I'm here to say to you is you can do the same thing with your state of mind. Now understand, it never just happens to you. You don't have approach anxiety. You don't get scared. You don't have approach anxiety. You are not shy as a human being. It's something that you've created outside of your conscious awareness, and therefore you can create something new. You can create something different. You create something a lot more fun. So another gold key principle. Granted, beautiful women are going to create an altered state. So why not design the state you wish to be in? Granted that they're going to create an altered state, why don't you design the altered state that you would like to go into? If you could stop and say, okay, what would be most useful for me in terms of my internal representations? What I visualize, how I talk to myself, in terms of your flow of feeling in your body, what would be most useful in terms of the way you feel in your clothes, the way your musculature feels, the way you talk to yourself on the inside and on the outside. Granted that you're going to go into an altered state, what would be most useful for you? And what beliefs would be most useful for you to have? Do you think it would be useful to have the belief that if one woman who's beautiful judges you as being inadequate, every beautiful woman is going to get the message telepathically, you'll be cut off for life? Do you think that's useful? No, but many guys think about it that way. So what are the internal representations and the beliefs you would like to have? What if you built the belief that you never get rejected? You just learned something about what you need to get where you want to go, or you have some fun, or you discover if the other person has good taste. So learning to create your own meanings and your own beliefs about things is also a powerful part of designing your state. So here's some ways to create leverage with your state. When people come to me, and they often do, they've been stuck for a long time, my job as a coach is not usually to answer the question they're asking. Because you see, the question they're asking is limited by the very thinking that's keeping them trapped. So I often have to step back and look and say, where can I find leverage with this person? And as you grow in your role as a student of mine, in whatever capacity you want to do that, you'll find that I'm very good at pointing out the leverage. So there's a lot of things you do. You can change the perceived meaning of the interaction. What do I mean by that? Well, I had a student come to me who's a Special Forces veteran. And again, I don't remember whether he's Marine Recon or Navy SEALs, doesn't really matter. And he said, you know, Ross, I'm terrified of talking to beautiful women. I've been shot at, I've jumped out of airplanes at very high altitude, and I only open the parachute just as I'm going to hit the ground. I've been through explosions. I'd rather be shot at than talk to a beautiful girl. Now, to me, I'm weighing this up and going, let me see. Getting shot at, talking to beautiful girl, didn't quite weigh up for me. But in his mind, based on the representations that he had built in his mind and the meaning that he attached to it, he was quite terrified. It was not a joke. One of the things I do as a teacher is try to bring up a counterexample to begin to get leverage into that person's belief system. So I said, okay, let's say there's a beautiful woman standing across the room and you really want to talk to her. Could you go up and talk to her? And he started, you know, to shake. He said, no, I couldn't do it. I said, okay. What if there was an attacker sneaking up behind her about to slit her throat with a knife? Could you talk to her then? He said, hell yeah. I'd go over there, break the guy's arm, and maybe even kill him on the way down the ground and tell her, look out. So I said, when there's no physical danger, it's just her, you're terrified. But when there's someone with a knife and someone could get hurt, or you have to hurt someone, you've got no fear. Does that make any sense? And he said, yeah, that's true, and it doesn't make any sense. So it was the meaning that he attached to it that somehow, first of all, he assumed that he was going to get rejected, whatever that means, and that it would be a terrible thing. It would mean he was not attractive to any women. So I sort of turned around and gave him a different meaning. So you can change the meaning that you create. And the meaning I want to suggest is not that you know you're going to succeed, because that's as equally silly a prediction as knowing that you're going to fail. You really don't know. You can have some probabilities or some guesswork. But I would change the meaning of success or failure. I would say you're either going to enjoy the process of getting what you want, or you'll enjoy the process of learning what you need to get what you want or even better. So you're always going to extract something from it that's useful. We'll get to this a little bit later in the presentation when I talk about acceptance / extraction confidence. You can change your physiology. Many guys who say that they have approach anxiety or fear really don't. What they have is an overamping, meaning if there was a disgusting, horribly fat woman, 500 pounds, cookie crumbs in her mustache and back boobs, you know, and I said, go talk to her, most guys would say, okay, I can do it. They would want to, but they could. But with a really, really beautiful woman, it's not fear, it's overamping. There's so much sexual energy running through the circuitry that the guy just can't think straight. Who could, right? So the solution there is to work with the physiology, to show them how to de-amp themselves, to ground that sexual energy into the ground through their feet, shift their breathing, shift their posture. With some people, it's the physiology that provides the leverage. You can change the internal representations. I have something called the orgasmic basketball bounce, where I get people to visualize the feeling, externalize it, turn it into a symbol, and shift it back into their body. It radically changes them. I don't have time to go through that here, but you can find it in my Fear to Charisma DVD. If you go to speedseduction.biz, click on products, and then click on Fear to Charisma, you'll see that there. And then you can change the internal dialogue. Shut off the internal dialogue, lower the volume on the internal dialogue. I often say to guys who have a voice that rags on them, what if you were driving down the street and there's a little man sitting on your shoulder, and every time you're about to make a turn, he yelled, look out! You probably get into an accent. So this is again from NLP. I owe this to my teacher, Richard Bandler. You can turn down the volume or make that voice that rags on you really pleasant. Give it a confident tonality. So the bottom line is, with all these various different tools, I'm not here with you. I can't talk to you right through this recorded medium. If you join my coaching club, I can do that quickly. But here, what I can tell you is my skill as a teacher, these are the four major areas in which I get leverage into a student's experience. And probably at least one, if not more, will really be of assistance to you. Now, the challenge is with some students, they're working on the internal dialogue, when in reality, it's the physiology that needs to be shifted. So again, this is the advantage of having a very experienced coach, because I can look right away and know within like 5 seconds which of these you need. I want to give you some attitudes and realizations for successful women. Since I said that your state can be partially comprised of your attitudes, your beliefs, your realizations about women, therefore, if you shift those, you can really shift your state. So let's go through these. One of my beliefs, at least when it comes to the initial walk-up, and indeed all the time, is 99% of the time, the worst that will happen is nothing will happen. Now, a lot of times, good stuff will happen. But let's say, if you take the universe of times when you don't get what you want, 99% of the time when you approach women, the worst that will happen is nothing will happen. She's not going to laugh at you or be mean. She'll just ignore you. She just won't respond, or she'll nod her head or smile and walk on. The image that is conveyed by Hollywood, that beautiful women are just itching for a chance to reject men and be cruel and vicious, it's fantasy. It's no more real than the Hollywood version of what cops do in the real world. It's nonsense. There's some context in which women feel they have a license to be a cunt. You know, some women will get that way in a club, but one of the reasons I don't go to clubs. Another one, I never get rejected. I only discover if a woman has good taste. Here's a really good one. This next attitude, I shouldn't even be giving this away, but it's so powerful that if you just put this into action, if you write this attitude down and think about it, and then imagine your last 10 interactions with women and how they would have been different had this attitude been there, you'll see how powerful it is. And it's this, I seldom take a woman's first response to me as written in stone. It's almost always just a reflection of what she's thinking or feeling or believing in that moment, and it's almost always subject to change. Now, what does having this belief do? It makes me non-reactive. It allows me to realize that her first response may have nothing to do with me, and it makes that response something that I don't have to fight. Instead, if you use the metaphor of like Aikido, I can utilize that response to move the person towards where I want. But unless you're grounded into this attitude, you won't be able to stand your ground when that kind of thing happens, or move away when you need to. Here's another one. I'll either get what I want or I'll enjoy the process of learning what I need to get what I want, or even better. If that were really your attitude, then I think it would shift how you responded to stepping into the unknown a little bit. Here's another one. She can do whatever she wants. I control. I choose what I learn from every interaction, from every situation. She can do whatever she wants. I control where my energy goes. Am I going to deflate like a balloon, or am I going to stay grounded and focused and outward focused? So she can do whatever she wants. I control where my energy goes, and I will decide what meaning, what learning I extract from my interactions. She's not going to decide what it means. I will decide. She's not going to control where my feeling goes. She doesn't collapse me. I stay here no matter what she does. Now, that takes some energetic practice. If you really want to change, you want to pair the belief with an energetic practice, with how you hold yourself and what you do with the flow of feeling in your body. And then finally, I want you to take on this one. When I don't know what to do, I take a bold step forward. When I don't know what to do, I take a bold step forward. Many times guys say, I just didn't know what to do in this situation. Well, who says that not knowing what to do is a sign to do nothing or to stop? Who said that? That's not written in any sacred text. Not that I believe that texts are sacred. It's not a law of physics. What if you had that orientation? When you don't know what to do with a woman, you take a bold step forward. What was that? What if that was just the way you did things? It'd be very hard to be anything other than a pretty fun person. You might not always get what you want, but you'll always be moving forward in a way where at least you can learn something. And when you develop the confidence and the tool set to really extract maximum learning and to dissipate confusion, to transmute confusion into learning and clarity, that's my Nail Your Inner Game program, which I'll recommend at the end of this module. It'll show you how to do all of that. But for now, all I can do is give you a little bit of the pieces of that. These attitudes, I want to give you the assignment of writing each one down and then writing down how your life with women would have been different had you had these, and how it will be different as you put these into play. Now, one of the bits of mischief that happens is people teach you that you should have a lot of confidence. But confidence, again, is what we call a nominalization in NLP. There's no such thing as confidence. It's a state. And being that it's a state, it comes in different variations. And as you see here, we'll go through each one, but there's performance confidence, rehearsal confidence, acceptance slash extraction confidence, and compassion confidence. And what you need to do is to find the right mix that works for you. Everybody's different. Let's talk, what is performance confidence? It simply means that based on a history of doing things right, you have a reasonable expectation in your skill set that you'll do them right and effectively again. If you've done a tightrope walk 1,000 times flawlessly, odds are, you still have to stay alert, but odds are you're going to do it right 101,001, right? So thing is, performance confidence is based on many past successful experiences. The problem with many guys who are stuck is they want the performance confidence before they've done any performing, or when they've only done very little performing. And that just is impossible. It's like saying 2 + 2 = 5. So you can't have confidence in your performance if you've never done any performing. It just doesn't work that way. This is what this is a big Gordian knot. I don't know if you know the story of the Gordian knot, but it was a knot that no one could untie. And if anyone could untie it, they'd be named king of all Greece. And Alexander came along and just cut it with his sword. So the trap that guys get into is they won't take a step forward unless they're guaranteed a perfect result. But of course, you can't get any result, let alone a perfect one, unless you take a step forward. So they wind up never taking a step forward and never getting any results. Does this make sense? So you see here, you wind up never taking a step and never being certain. You know, congratulations, you're a double failure. Okay, you really fucked up your life if that is the loop you're stuck in. What do most guys do to address this? Well, they just absorb more material. They figure if I just study more, then finally I'll be certain enough to take that step and know that it'll come out perfect. But it really doesn't work that way. So how do you know if you're suffering from that syndrome? Well, check your bookshelf, your closet, your basement, your CD shelf. If you've got a lot of CDs and DVDs and programs on pickup and seduction, if you've got notes from all the seminars you've gone to, but you still haven't done much of anything, you've got the problem. You have the syndrome. And the solution is to aim at the right kind of confidence, to recognize you cannot have performance confidence until you've done the performing. So the right kind of confidence will also depend on where you are in your learning cycle. As you get enough trials and practice under your belt, you can start to have legitimate performance confidence. So you want to avoid premature performance confidence seeking syndrome. Premature performance confidence seeking syndrome. Let's talk about rehearsal confidence, because I do believe in this. Rehearsal confidence means that you rehearse in vivid detail, out loud, what your responses will be. I've said many times, if you want a different response, rehearse it. So you're going to rehearse how you'll sound, how you'll look, what your movements will be. You rehearse out loud the way you'll sound. You rehearse responding and feeling a certain way. Now, there's some keys to good effective rehearsal. Number one is repetition. You want to do it a lot. Second, it's got to be in an altered state. I suggest before you do your rehearsal, you do some breathing. You energize yourself with some breath, and you do a little progressive relaxation. And finally, it's got to be multimodal. What do I mean by multimodal? It's not enough to just do it in your head. You have to get up. You actually have to make the movements you're going to move. Stand the way you would stand. Actually perform the gestures that you would perform. This kind of codes it into your neurology. So there's rehearsal confidence. Now, I believe in rehearsal confidence. I've got several programs and products to help you with that. However, special gold key and warning. You see, I put this in red. I haven't done that in any other modules. What I'm about to show you is really powerful, but I want to warn you about rehearsing too much. For guys who are afraid to take action and are looking for that perfection before they take a step, rehearsing can be a trap, because you think if you just rehearse enough, then you'll be perfect. No. Rehearsal will make you do better, but you're still not going to be perfect before you take the step. So having said that, here's the gold key. If you really want to add punch to your visualizations, imagine it from the woman's perspective. So first, imagine how you would look, how you would stand, rehearse it out loud, and then I want you to imagine that imagine looking at yourself through her eyes. So imagine you're like looking through her eyes at you, and hear her on the inside say, "Damn, he's hot. I gotta meet him. I want to meet him." And then imagine the flow of feelings in her body as she feels a little bit of a desire to go and talk to you. Not like overwhelming, boiling lust, because you'll burn out the circuits, but just a little bit of that. Wow, I really want to meet this guy. And then pull back and see her through your eyes. So shift perceptual position. So now you're looking at her again from your perspective and see her smiling at you. What are we doing here? We're changing perceptual positions. So you're starting out seeing yourself from her perception, her eyes. It's like you're inside of her head looking at you. And what this does is, I don't know exactly how it works, but it sort of keys the other person to respond in the way you want them to. So first you want to rehearse the way you will look, you will sound, and then slide into the other person, take on their perceptual position. But again, I give you the warning, don't rehearse too much. Watch your rehearsal to action ratio. For every 5 points of rehearsal, there should be 20 or 30 points of taking action. Let me tell you about the next kind of confidence that's very useful. Often this is what you'll have to rely on in the beginning. It's what I call acceptance extraction confidence. What does acceptance confidence mean? It basically comes down to acknowledging the facts and eliminating all of the drama. Essentially, it means accepting that you can't know with certainty what any outcome is going to be. You just don't know. Even if you've done things 1,000 times right with your pickup, you don't know what 1,001 will bring you, because women are random, they're chaotic. They have a structure, but that structure can be chaotically influenced by the smallest little element. And so you never really know for sure, and that's okay. So it's based on acknowledging that you don't know what's going to happen, that you don't like that you don't know what's going to happen, and then you make a decision. So you acknowledge reality. You'd like to talk to the girl. You acknowledge that you don't know what's going to happen. You acknowledge that you don't like that you don't know. And then you make a choice, and I'm going to go find out. Let's go find out what will happen. And really, this has to do with epistemology. Epistemology is the study of how we can know things. Can we know things just from figuring out in our head, or do we ultimately, is there some realm of human experience where we have to go out and experiment to know? I want to suggest that empiricism is your epistemology. And empiricism says that ultimately, the only way to find out about the world outside of ourselves is to go and experiment. So it's a perspective that says you're going to let action and reality teach you what works rather than worrying or guessing or speculating. That it's okay to form a theory, as you see, I form theories, but you have to let reality and action teach you what will work. This is the most important little bit of leverage I can give you. Now, it's sort of not the kind of thing you would think about. It's not, doesn't feel like super room-filling confidence, but you don't need to aim at that. Again, this perspective that you will let action and reality teach you what works is a key to having a fun and fulfilling and thorough and varied life. In this approach, we acknowledge something. We acknowledge that there are no answers. At best, there are ideas. It's only when the idea is acted upon that it becomes an answer. If you're looking for answers, no. At best, you're going to find incredibly useful and accurate and powerful ideas, but they only become answers when you act on them. You have to potentiate the idea into the reality of an answer through your action. Not your speculating, not your worrying, not your chewing on it, not your ruminating, but through action. You should write this down 100 times, number each one. Without action, there are no answers and there is no knowledge. I mean it. Write it down. If you want your life with a woman to transform, write it down 100 times. Number each one. Sign and date it. Without action, there are no answers. There's no knowledge. Now, what does this do? It means that not knowing what's going to happen ceases to mean that you have to stop and wait. Not knowing what's going to happen means you choose to move forward, that there's an opportunity to learn, that you act in a way to find out. So you change the meaning of not knowing. You're not going to claim that you do know. You're going to accept that you don't and then change what that means and change the decision and the choice and the action that follows. And you see that you're sticking with facts. There's no drama. You don't say, oh my God, Sally Jane. You don't spin around it. By spinning, you don't start making representations of how women have always hurt you and why that woman treated you like crap and you were nice to her for a year and all she did is talk about the boyfriend. That's all going to drop. You drop all that noise in the system and you just focus in on the fact that you'd like to talk to the woman, you don't know what's going to happen, you don't like that you don't know, and then you choose to go forward. Now, something may happen. As you get used to living this way, you may begin to get excited about knowing. You may get really, really happy and enthusiastic about not knowing because it means you're about to expand your definition of what you can do in the world, and that is cool. That's a cool thing. And again, note what it's not doing. We're not building a super powerful, super dynamic, 40-foot tall you. Now, I do teach that, you know, with rehearsal confidence, but for some of you, rehearsal confidence is not going to be useful. We're not aiming at optimal. We're not aiming at what Tony Robbins talks about, peak states. You know, fuck that. You can't go around in a peak state all the time. Number one, you'll burn yourself out. Number two, you'll overwhelm a lot of people. And number three, peak states involve a lot of noise sometimes. You just don't need to do it. We don't want optimal or super world-beating. We just want nominal, just what will work. Anything that's required to get us in a useful state and to get our feet moving and get the action going is what we want to do. And note, when you're seeking a solution, the most efficient one is the one you want, the one that requires the least energy, the least preparation to get the job done. And this, most of life just requires steady day-to-day efficiency. It doesn't require heroism. Now, sometimes it does. There is a place in life for heroism, for super excellence. I get it. To me, what I'm doing here is heroic. I'm reaching out to people and going, look, I'm going to break your chains. I'm going to open your prison door. Hopefully, you'll come back and out of reciprocity, want to become my customer and give back to me and also want to keep getting from me. Maybe not, but I think this is a heroic effort I'm undertaking. Believe me, this is me at my best, doing what I love most. But usually in life, you don't need to be heroic. You don't need super excellence or Olympic level performance. You just need steady efficiency from day to day. And remember, you know, you're just going to talk to a woman. It's not some heroic Herculean feat. They're humans like we are. Their plumbing is different, and the way they process the world is different, but they're still human. And again, there's nothing wrong with being radiant and powerful. You will experience that. I guarantee that you will, but sometimes it's not what you want to aim at, and it's not necessary. You don't have to wait for it. It's not required. Now, the other part of acceptance confidence is extractions confidence, and that just means that you have a very good strategy from learning from situations, even situations that may be confusing. And I should back up and say that I think one of the biggest challenges for guys starting out in this is not fear, or frustration or loneliness, it's confusion. Because you'll try a tool and it doesn't work 100% of the way. It works maybe 70% or 90%. And you can't quite figure out, is it working? Is it not working? Am I making progress? Am I falling backwards? And that confusion can really keep you stuck. But if you have a good strategy for learning, for transmuting confusion into clarity, then you got something going. And again, I bring you back to this idea that I can and will determine what I learn. I can and will determine what I learn, what I take from every person, situation, action, circumstance, choice in my life. When I say take, I don't mean take from others. I mean take away, extract the value that you take from it. If you really want to get this mastered, I recommend my Nail Your Inner Game program. It's an extensive program all about this. You can see the link here, but it's one of my newer products, and it's absolutely fantastic. We're getting rave reviews for that. It's everything you need for that acceptance and extraction confidence. Here's a really cool thing. Acceptance confidence can be yours right now. It doesn't require that you first have social skill or a history of doing things well, because it's an attitude towards uncertainty. It simply welcomes uncertainty with the choice that you will learn something of value. Now, when you can walk through the world without needing a guarantee, you're ahead of 99% of the people in this world. Most people do not know how to handle uncertainty. They will kill someone rather than go through uncertainty. If anyone challenges their beliefs, they'll kill that person rather than deal with the uncertainty being challenged. When you can walk through the world and be okay with being uncertain, there's something you very subtly radiate. It can't be deflected. It can't be competed with. And it's not frightening or in any way slick or scary. It's an attitude towards life. And I guess I would call it stealth charisma, because people would not see it coming and they'll never be able to quite put their finger on why you're attractive. And finally, we have what I call compassion confidence. I believe in life you have to have kind of like double vision, bifocals. You have to be able to see far away and close up. Now, what do I mean by this? I don't mean it literally, but I mean, in a sense, when you're dealing with people, you have to be able to see the outcome that you want to get with them. You have to see there's something that you would like, some emotions, and from that, some behavior. But then you also have to take the broader view and remember that we're all humans. We're all in the same boat. You have to be able to do both. There are many areas of life in which taking on that kind of vision is useful. In a business, you have to keep your eye on the horizon and see the broad vision, but then you have to look close up at the day-to-day challenges and potential problems that could come up. So this ability to shift your view, to shift your vision, not physically, but you understand what I'm speaking metaphorically, shift your perspective is crucial for success. So many people get stuck in one or the other. So compassion confidence is about a certain perception. I want to tell you what it's not. I'm not really a sentimental person. It's not about gushing with the white light of Jesus. No offense if you believe in Jesus. It's not a Hallmark card. You understand? But rather, it's a perception that we're all in the same boat. Here I have my birthday suit and last breath theory. If you think of some woman, the last woman who really intimidated you, I want to ask you, what was she wearing the day she was born? The first day she was born, what was she wearing? Same thing you were, nothing. And one day, I guarantee, one way or the other, she will take her last breath. She will die. That's common to all of us. One day, death is going to come, and all her tricks and all the stuff ain't going to matter. He's going to cut her right down. And in between that, people are usually just trying to figure out how to make sense of it. So compassion confidence is somewhere in the back of your mind. You hold a little bit of that perspective that we're all in the same boat, that the same hands are constantly bringing us in and out of existence, shaping the clay of our consciousness at every moment, and then putting it back together again and reshaping it. If you cease to view people as separate from you as objects, but rather view everything as an ongoing process being generated by the same whatever, whether you want to personify it as God, call it nature, call it expansion and contraction. If every once in a while you can slide into that worldview or keep it in the back of your mind, it creates a different kind of view towards people. A few years back, I was hanging out with a student, and it was late at night. We're coming out of this place, and two girls waiting for a cab, and I was just being funny. I said, look, there's two lovely ladies at the end of the evening waiting for a cab. Now, for some reason, with one of them, it went in the wrong way. I don't know why, but it did. She got very angry. She said, look, it's two fucking assholes who couldn't get laid, desperate to get some. Now, didn't faze me, but my student got very angry. He went to like yell at them. I put my arm out and said, no, they can do whatever they want. We always come from compassion. That woman is someone's daughter. She's someone's best friend. She's someone's sister. Somewhere she's deeply loved. Now, this changed everything. Everything changed in that moment. Because, you see, I ceased to view her as some girl I wanted to get laid with. I saw her as a human. And I described the truth of her life. And in that moment, everything changed. She just got so friendly. They dropped all their shields. And they said, look, we're so sorry. You guys have been assholes all night, grabbing our asses, staring at our tits. What's your name? And I said, I'm Mr. Wonderful. And we walked off. But I want you to contemplate. I want you to even freeze this presentation and really think about what I'm about to say. If you can walk through uncertainty without needing a guarantee, and you can give the other person radical permission, I mean right down to the root of who you are, radical permission to have their first response to you, then something very powerful and transformational might take place. Because thing is, most guys think if they're trying out something new, if they're being courageous, the woman owes them their support. The woman should be nice to them because, after all, look how brave they're being, taking a risk. No, that's not in any contract. Beautiful women, no women, no person signs a contract promising that they should support you, that they're going to give you emotional support and encouragement when you're trying on something new. It doesn't work that way. So if you can handle the uncertainty and you give the other person complete permission, radical permission, I mean, really mean it, to have their first response, then something magic can happen. So we're now coming to the close of this Up to Speed with Speed Seduction course. Now, I may add future modules or bonus modules, but I want to thank you. I recommend that you review each module at least 3 times. There's a lot of material here, and this is just the free stuff. I really mean it when I say that as much as I've done my best to present a basic overview of the speed seduction technology, this is from the technology from 1997. This is getting you up to speed with the 2.0 course, the home study course from 1997. I haven't given you even an inkling, hardly anything, of what's in the more recent course, the 3.0 course, which I just came out with October of 2008. So let me recommend this. I recommend my Nail You're in a Game program. You can see the link there. I recommend the Speed Seduction 3.0 course. This is my first complete home study course in nearly 12 years. As you can see, I'm a damn good teacher and a damn good coach. I love what I do. Join my coaching program. Try it out. The first month is $1. After that, it's $97 a month. You can quit at any time. But you'll see what the idea is. Go to rjcoaching.com, www.rjcoaching.com, and you'll see what is offered there. And of course, my website, speedseduction.biz, has all of my products. I want to thank you for taking this journey with me. I put a lot of thought, a lot of effort into this, and I welcome your feedback. Please feel free to pass this along. Post it on your website, put it on blogs, stumble upon YouTube. I don't care. Just make sure you don't change anything and always give it away for free. Thanks. I look forward to continuing to be your teacher in whatever capacity you feel that's what you want. Thanks.